Well, our theme for today has been well introduced. Now, every joyful person that we meet is not necessarily a Christian. And every Christian is not necessarily a joyful person. But when a Christian is really joyful, and a group of Christians are really joyful together, they are likely to be the most effective witnesses. Well, what lies at the heart of a Christian's joy? A great preacher about a century ago once said that most men have just enough religion to make them miserable. There's so many things you're not allowed to do if you're religious. I suppose today we'd have to say that most men don't have even that much religion. Bertrand Russell, famous philosopher, mathematician, Nobel Prize winner, he called himself an atheist or an agnostic, depending on who he was talking to. His attitude to the Christian faith can perhaps be seen from one of his quotes. He said this: "The whole problem with the world is that fools and fanatics are always so certain of themselves, but wiser people are full of doubts." Now, his daughter became a Christian, and she longed for her father to come to faith as well. But she said he had met so many Christian people who simply were moralists. You mustn't do this, you mustn't do that. And it put him off. What a difference it would have made if he could have met some Christians who were leading really positive lives. Well, some people are joyful by nature. And it's a joy to be with them, isn't it? I'm sure we know some like that. Most of us react joyfully given the right environment. We could all list a number of things, I'm sure, in our lives that make us really joyful. But Christian joy is different. Even the most dour person, dour by nature, going through tough circumstances, can know this joy. Peter, writing to the churches, going through appalling trials, talks of the unseen Jesus like this: "Though you have not seen him, you love him. And even though you do not see him now, you believe in him and are filled with an inexpressible and glorious joy, for you are receiving the end result of your faith, the salvation of your souls." The joy that Peter is describing here arises entirely from the Christian's love relationship with Jesus, despite the trials they face. Now, most of us will know when we read this that we fall far short of this kind of experience. I know there have been people coming to this fellowship and saying that as soon as they've come through the door and mixed amongst us, they've noticed the love, they've felt the love here. And that's lovely, that's just how it should be. I haven't heard of anyone yet, perhaps there has been, but I haven't heard of anyone yet who's come through that door and said, "I just noticed the sheer joy in everybody's life." Well, let's be clear. We have a very happy, light-hearted relationship with each other. We're always having fun together, aren't we? That's good. I wouldn't want the atmosphere to be any different here. But let's not confuse this kind of general bonhomie with Christian joy. So, what's the real nature of this joy, a Christian's joy? Can we say that our relationship with Jesus is so deep that it fills us with a joy which is inexpressible, so overwhelming we can't find words to describe it. Well, it would be easy for us to dismiss such phrases as this as just Bible superlatives, not to be taken too literally. Surely for just ordinary Christians like us, the Christian life is much more routine, steady discipline, without any such extremes. Well, before we settle for this view, let's look at what the New Testament actually teaches us and ask ourselves, does the Lord have something much deeper for us to learn about in our relationship with him? Many eminent Christians testify to this. I suppose most of us will know something of the writings of C.S. Lewis, best known for the Narnia stories, I suppose, but many other books he wrote on Christian faith. At the age of 15, he determined he would live his life as an atheist, and he continued with that view for many years. But his life changed completely when he realized something rather strange, that the God he didn't believe in was seeking him. He describes his experience like this, and these are his words. Night after night, I felt whenever my mind lifted, even for a second, from my work, the steady, unrelenting approach of him whom I so earnestly desired not to meet, I gave in and admitted that God was God. I knelt and prayed. Perhaps that night, the most dejected and reluctant convert in all of England. They're his words. He said he was brought into Christianity like a prodigal, kicking, struggling, resentful, and darting his eyes in every direction for a chance to escape. Well, this was far from a joyful experience. It was only later that he discovered the true nature and purpose of joy and its place in his life. As a result of his deepening knowledge of God, he went on to write a book entitled Surprised by Joy. He realizes that joy is like a signpost, these are his words, signpost to the lost in the woods, pointing the way. Well, God had been seeking him for years. It reminds us of the Lord's words in John 15, "You didn't choose me, I chose you and appointed you to go and bear fruit." He had chosen Lewis not just to bring him to faith, but also to bear fruit, and in doing so, experience this overwhelming sense of joy. Well, is this the experience just for eminent Christians? If we read a lot of Christian biographies, we might be tempted to think this, but we need to search out the truth for ourselves. The key lies in some words of Jesus that we've studied many times, and I'm not making any apologies for referring to them again today, because they describe a truth that lies at the very heart of the Christian life and our experience of him. Let's look at John 15, the story of the vine. I am the true vine, and my Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes so that it will be even more fruitful. You are already clean because of the word I have spoken to you. Remain in me as I also remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. I am the vine. You are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. If you do not remain in me, you are like a branch that is thrown away and withers. Such branches are picked up and thrown into the fire and burned. If you remain in me and my words remain in you, ask whatever you wish, and it will be done for you. This is my Father's glory, that you bear much fruit, showing yourselves to be my disciples. As the Father has loved me, so have I loved you. Now remain in my love. If you keep my commands, you will remain in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commands and remain in his love. I have told you this so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. Well, there's material there for about 50 Sundays, but I want us just to think especially of that last verse, verse 11. I have told you this so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. This is the whole reason for giving this picture of the vine, so that our joy might be complete. And he will put this joy into our lives if we abide in him. That's the key. But how do we do this? Well, we've considered the vine life many times, but let's just remind ourselves that Jesus sees himself as the source of spiritual life for every Christian. Just like a vine channeling life along the branches to produce fruit. When I was a young lad, we used to live within a bus ride of Hampton Court Palace, and it was always great fun to go there, particularly the maze. I think you had to pay a penny to go in those days. But also to see the great vine that they have there. A huge vine. It's centuries old, but it's still producing masses of fruit. And it's got these branches which extend to over 120 feet. Now, Jesus wants us to see him like that vine. He wants to see this. See him. We want us to see him as a vine extending over the whole world, branches reaching out across the whole world. Every single Christian is a branch through which his life can flow. That's the picture that he gives us. He wants us to live each day with the consciousness of his life flowing through us into all the situations that we meet. Now, these are not just fine thoughts. He really is with us and in whatever we are facing, wanting us to experience this flow. Lord, I have this difficult person in front of me and I don't know how to tackle him. Lord, I face this problem which is totally beyond me. Lord, I keep having these unloving, critical thoughts. Proud, selfish thoughts, Lord. I just can't deal with these things on my own. I hand them all over to you. And then when we find that words are coming into our mind to help us deal with that difficult person, loving, wholesome thoughts replacing the unworthy ones, ways of handling seemingly impossible situations. That's the vine. That's the flow of his life through us. That's what he wants us to experience. And his presence then becomes much more real and we will develop a growing confidence that we are on the right track for the joy that he promises. But we might think, well, won't there be times when, despite this, despite our Christian beliefs, we will be subject to mood swings like everybody else? Yes, of course. But the difference is we have a remedy. We will find that sometimes this remedy takes a lot of spiritual energy and faith and time to apply. We can sometimes much more easily sink into a slough of despond. What's the remedy? Remain in the vine. Suppose trials are stacking up and we can only see clouds ahead. We need to remind ourselves that we are still branches through which his life can flow, even in these dark situations. If we begin to think a situation is hopeless and start sinking into depression, we're slipping away from the vine. We're becoming like one of those withering branches. Do you remember when Paul was under house arrest? He couldn't get around to preach the gospel as he wanted, and yet he wrote this. He said, "Yes, I will rejoice, for I know that my situation will turn out for your deliverance through your prayers and the provision of the Spirit of Jesus Christ." He knew that God was working behind the scenes, and that enabled him to remain in the vine and continue to experience the joy. Perhaps as Paul wrote this message to the Philippians, he remembered his first visit there. Do you remember when he was in Philippi? Paul and Silas were arrested and thrown into jail by the city's magistrates. Yet while those two men sat with their feet in the stocks, their backs burning from the throbbing with pain from the flogging they just had, they began to pray and sing hymns. Perhaps they recalled those words of Nehemiah we've had earlier this morning. The joy of the Lord is your strength. Joy is not just an icing on the cake for Christians. Just happy feelings a Christian can have when things go well. It is of the very essence of our relationship with Jesus. Those two men saw how when they expressed that joy, it triggered an earthquake that shook the prison to its foundations. The joy of the Lord is your strength. It's not just an optional extra, not just icing on the cake. Well, there may be barriers preventing us experiencing this joy. We may have an overwhelming sense of failure and our own sinfulness. We're not worthy to experience this joy. Well, no feelings like that need pull us down. Jesus has the answer to any feelings of guilt and failure that we may have. If we come to the cross in genuine repentance and faith, that's the complete answer. We are totally forgiven. It's all wiped away. And remember, there is joy in heaven over one sinner who repents. We can share in that joy. Lord, here I am. I'm that sinner. Let's rejoice. There may be another barrier. We may be facing big trials in life and can't raise our spirits above them. They just dominate our lives. Even Elijah found this. Elijah, one of the greatest men of God of all time. And once he said, "Lord, I've had enough. Take my life, I'm just no good." Elijah said that. Well, in his case, there was a physical cause as well as a spiritual. He just needed rest and refreshment, and God gave him that before dealing with his spiritual problem. So if we're feeling low and going in one of these mood swings, we need to check out purely physical things. Do I need a bit of a break? Do I need a bit of rest and refreshment? But if we've checked out these physical things and we find there is a deep-seated spiritual problem in our lives, what do? Well, we need to fix our eyes on Jesus and follow his example. Let's just have a look at what the writer to the Hebrews says in Hebrews 12. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. For the joy that was set before him. How could Jesus be thinking of joy when facing the most brutal torture devised by man? And there was more. There was also the shame. When a man was crucified, it was not just to punish him, but also to mark him out as a criminal. He would be stripped naked, nailed to the cross, raised up for all to see. Look, this is what we do to criminals. The suffering he endured, the shame he scorned. What sustained him through all this? It was the joy set before him. Of course, there's no joy in the suffering and shame, but he knew that within a few hours he would be able to cry out, "It is finished." He's made the way, he's paid the price of our sin. He's made the way back for us to have a relationship with God. That was the joy that sustained him throughout the suffering and shame. Now, when we face trials, we too can be sustained by joy. And this is what marks us out as Christians. The joy for us is the knowledge that we are in the vine. We're not on our own. Suffering still has to be endured, but he is with us in it, and his life can still flow through. Though we may not see it now, he will have a purpose in it all. He's working behind the scenes. And whatever happens in this life, we have an eternity with Jesus to look forward to. This all comes from the vine life. Abiding in the vine, it enables us to see the whole of life in a new light. I read some time ago of Dr. Paul Brand. You may have heard of him. He was an orthopedic surgeon who spent his life treating patients with leprosy. And he developed some amazing techniques, particularly with people's hands that had been devastated by this terrible disease. And one of his patients said he was so pleased that he'd had this disease. He said, "Otherwise, I would have been a normal man, chasing wealth, higher position in society. I would never have met such wonderful people as Dr. Brand and his wife. I would have never come to know the God who lives in them." Well, Dr. Brand said, towards the end of his life, "Those of us who involve ourselves in places where there is the most suffering, look back in surprise to find that it was there that we discovered the reality of joy. Well, we began this morning by asking ourselves, is it possible for us to know a joy which is so overwhelming as to be beyond words? Is this kind of extreme joy open to just ordinary Christians? That was the question. The answer must surely be yes, but only to the extent that we have learned how to remain in the vine. And bear in mind, it's not just to give us happy feelings, not just the icing on the cake, but it's so that we might show more of the character of Jesus in that way, and in that way make us more effective witnesses. If any of us this morning here feel, as I do, that we have much more to learn like this, what do? We need to be really determined from now onwards that we're going to understand more about this vine life. How will we leave chapel this morning? What's for dinner? Carry on life as usual? Or will we determine that life is going to be different as we seek to know more of this life of abiding in the vine? We've got to deal with any blockages. We've got to come to the cross in repentance, or anything the Spirit convicts us of, deal thoroughly with sin, and then think about situations we face this week. Lord, how do you want your life to flow through me this week into that situation tomorrow, Tuesday, Wednesday? How do you want your life to flow through me? And be ready to listen to what he tells us. And look forward to the time when our relationship with Jesus has become so real and so deepened to the point that we too can truly say that we know a joy which is so overwhelming as to be beyond words. Isn't that something we've really got to go for? Jesus has something much deeper than most of us are experiencing in our relationship with him. I'd like us to perhaps just remain seated for a moment or two as we sing our last song. And as we sing this song, let's just remind ourselves of that picture that Jesus gives us of himself as the vine. We are the branches. I am the vine, you are the branches, he said. We don't have to struggle to be branches. We don't have to strive to be branches. We are branches. As soon as we make a commitment to follow Christ, we become a branch. We are potential branches where his life can flow through. We don't have to struggle to be a branch. We are a branch. What we need to be aware of, that we need to abide in him. It's maintaining that relationship with him, allowing that life to flow through, because if it doesn't, we just become withered branches. So let's sing this song together, which reminds us that we are in the vine. We'll sing it through twice. Let's beware of any blockages. Be ready to deal with those blockages and think ahead to this life ahead of us this week. I want your life to flow through me, Lord, into those things. Let's sing this song together.